Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 4th of May, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll learn about the UAS commencement ceremonies with guest Kitty Bosler. We'll find out about activities at the Mount Roberts Tram with new food and beverage manager Mark Collier. Father George Salides and Michael Lushkin from the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church will be here with a preview of Saturday's presentation on end-of-life issues. I want to talk to some people involved in Write On, an evening of one-act plays presented Saturday at the Thunder Mountain High School. At Writers Almanac Music and More today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight looks like rain showers, high temperatures, low temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, rain showers with high temperatures around 48 degrees.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal officials on the Wind River Reservation continue to seek answers after the Department of Energy announced uranium was found in tap water. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone reports.
DOE officials announced Wednesday evening that data collected last fall indicated that 4 households near a former uranium waste site had levels of uranium nearly twice the legal limit. Dean Goggles is executive director for the Wind River Environmental Quality Commission. He says tribal members are currently faced with more questions than answers.
I think we need to retest again and look at the results and see what it shows us. But for the future, for the site itself, we're still looking at it. We still have a lot of questions. I have to answer to the residents down there, so I have to ask those questions too.
Goggles says his main concern is health and human safety of area residents. There are approximately 40 people using the same water source, a pipeline paid for and installed by the Department of Energy in 1998 after the department announced that groundwater in the area posed a hazard due to high levels of uranium in the water table and soil. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
A 4-year effort to enroll more Native youth and volunteers in the Big Brothers Big Sisters mentoring program is gaining momentum. People from 20 different tribal programs gathered this week in New Mexico. KWSO's Will Robbins has more.
The Big Brothers Big Sisters Native American Mentoring Initiative is designed to both encourage and recruit greater numbers of Native American children and adults to participate. The program is run under the guidance of formal and informal Native advisors and elders to help ensure the administration of the program remains culturally relevant. Ivy Wright Bryan is the Big Brothers Big Sisters of America Director of Native American Mentoring and a member of the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe in Nevada.
In most, if not all, of our communities, we depend on extended family members and elders in our community to shape who our children will be.
Among the topics discussed at the annual gathering was the need for more adult mentors, especially men. Bernard Chimony is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northern New Mexico.
We know that in our traditional communities, we have men that are the wisdom keepers. So we're looking for those groups of people that will help and mentor and support and be role models.
Big Brothers Big Sisters established its Native American Tribal Community Initiative in 2008. The program now serves more than 3,500 Native American youth nationwide. In Albuquerque, I'm Will Robbins.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs honors the first Native American alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives investigator who was killed 76 years ago. A ceremony was held Thursday in Artesia, New Mexico, at the BIA Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. The name of William Lewis Pappin was unveiled on the memorial during the BIA's annual ceremony for fallen officers. Pappin was one of 3 Native ATF investigators who served during the Prohibition and post-Prohibition era. The annual event honors tribal, state, local, and federal law enforcement officers. The Native American Journalists Association is expressing disappointment of headlines it says are disrespectful to Native people. The organization issued a response this week to its members and the public about the use of headlines, puns, and name-calling surrounding the claim of U.S. Senate candidate Elizabeth Warren's Native heritage. Naja points to references like Sacaga Weiner, Pinocchio Hontas, and Chief Full of Lies. Naja says it's opening its doors to journalists and media outlets for information and questions. During this month in 1923, the first 14-cent stamp was issued in the United States and featured an American Indian. The stamp was inspired by a photo of rural Sioux leader Hollow Horn Bear. The photograph was taken in 1905 when the chief was in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of President Theodore Roosevelt. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's the last barn dance of spring, this Saturday, May 5th, 7:30 to 11 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown at 5th and Gold. Impromptu featuring Mike Zacharias on Hammer Dulcimer, John Church, Sally Donaldson, and more will provide lively music, and Tom Paul will teach and call contra and square dances. It's a spring night you don't want to miss. As always, you don't need experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors free for Saga and JV's barn dance this Saturday night.
Time is 3:03:06, and you are tuning in to KTO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. First guest is Katie Bosler from the University of Alaska Southeast, here to talk about commencement activities. Katie, thank you very much for coming down the station and be the first to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you, Jeff. Who told you it was my birthday was coming up?
A little bird. Facebook.
Yes. I think the birthday bird is definitely around this time of year. Lots of people born the first week of May, so I'm definitely not unique in that. It's also commencement weekend at the University of Alaska Southeast. The Juneau campus will hold its annual commencement. It'll be the 41st, Jeff, on Sunday, the 6th of May at 2 o'clock. And the chancellor is very busy this weekend because he is in Ketchikan and Sitka today and tomorrow for their commencement ceremonies for the UAS campuses in those communities. But I just want to let people know that the public is invited to our commencement ceremony. It should be quite dynamic. We're very excited about our commencement speaker, Crystal Rogers. She is graduating with a very unique degree it's called independent design. So she has designed her own degree, BLA, in that, and she's focusing on art, language, government, and history of indigenous and Western societies in Alaska with her minor in Tlingit. Crystal is a student of Tlingit, and she was recommended by the Alaska Native Languages faculty, Alice Taff and Lance Twitchell, as a candidate for speaker. She was chosen by the university, and I think she should give a very, as Alice Taff says, meaningful and memorable commencement address. Also, Jeff, John Borbridge Jr., who is a real statesman, elder, and a history maker, he'll be getting an honorary Doctorate of Laws degrees. And he was really instrumental in the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act back in 1971. He was also the first president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and of Sea Alaska. So we are very honored to bestow the honor of Honorary Doctorate of Laws on John Borbridge Jr. on Sunday. And then our commencement speaker will be our mayor of the city and borough of Juneau, Bruce Botello. He is in his last term as mayor. He actually started his first term back in 1988 to 91. He's been our mayor now, of course, for several years now. He also is, incidentally, the longest-serving attorney general for the state of Alaska. He served as attorney general from 1994 to 2002. Of course, very active in community and civic affairs. So we're looking forward to our commencement address from Mayor Botello.
Will he be doing a dance like Governor Sean Parnell did at the high school graduation a few years ago?
Did the governor do that?
Well, McLean Cannon did an interpretive dance, and Sean had to follow him, and he did a great job himself, though.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
So maybe they expect the same from Bruce.
Well, that might be a challenge to the mayor if he's listening. Could happen.
Number of students graduating this year?
Well, Jeff, every year we say it, but once again, we have a record number of students graduating. We have 620 candidates scheduled to receive master's, bachelor's, and associate's degrees, as well as certificates and occupational endorsements from all three of the campuses, and 529 of those will go to Juno graduates. Not everybody shows up, you know, for the commencement ceremony, but of course we honor them all. Some people don't live here, or they might have taken distance classes. But for those who are attending, I want to note something very important this year, Jeff, and that is that, you know, we do have a major renovation of the campus itself going on right now. We are converting to a pedestrian-only campus, and that means that the commencement ceremonies are at the rec center, right, at the Gamble Spurl facility that we share with the National Guard off the Back Loop Road. But there's not enough parking there for everyone, so we ask people who are coming to the ceremonies to park at the Auk Lake campus. Now, usually you could access the Auk Lake campus from just after Auk Lake on Auk Lake Way. That is permanently closed. It will open never again to vehicular access. So now you want to access the UAS Auk Lake campus from the North Back Loop Road entrance, which happens to be right across from the rec center entrance. So what we're asking people to do is park there, and there will be shuttle buses continuously running before and after the commencement ceremony to take you over to the rec center where everything's happening.
And do you have any idea what the most common major is?
The most common major, well, I think it's business, but I'd have to look at my paperwork. There's a couple other things I do need to mention, and that is that right after the ceremony, there'll be a reception and an art exhibit. Our art students are doing an exhibit from 4 to 6 in the Glacier View Room on the main campus, and that'll be right across from where the reception will be, which is in the Morant Cafeteria, and there's always just delicious goodies for the commencement reception. You don't want to miss that. Also, the Wuchin Club hosts annually in a special Alaska Native graduation celebration. Not a ceremony, it's a celebration. This is at Douglas Island Pink and Chum, that facility near the Empire. That'll be at 6 o'clock on Sunday night. So a lot going on. And I can look up that stat for you here. I'm just kind of in my computer here.
While you're looking that up, let me do a little brief news update.
Okay, you do that.
Here. The city and Borough of Juneau is warning residents not to access the Perseverance Trail System via the Flume Trail.
Oh,
Basin,
boy.
The Basin Road Bridge is the main access to Perseverance, but it was closed this morning for construction. It will also be closed on next Monday. The Flume Trail is the secondary access, but due to the risk of avalanches, it's not considered safe. The city's avalanche forecast has been discontinued until next winter, but a notice on the city's website says the risk of slides is still significant the higher you go into the mountains. We were walking up there last night. It's a beautiful trail. It's continued, and just don't access it by the Flume Trail.
So, and what's the danger again is because of
avalanches and mudslides.
Avalanches and mudslides still.
Coming
wow.
Up, especially at the Trail to Perseverance itself.
Okay, I got my stats here for you, Jeff.
Really, I got another news.
Another news brief.
Today, starting today, Sandy Beach Southeast Alaska Sailing Organization is having a boaters garage sale, an annual barbecue at the Sandy Beach Shelter, and the sale starts at 3:30. Barbecue starts at 4:30. Nonprofit Meet the Fleet event for those interested in sailing in Southeast Alaska. There's no charge, but donations are always welcome. And that's the end of this news brief. Now back to Katie Posler.
In graduation news from the University of Alaska Southeast, the top number of degree holders will be in the Bachelor of Arts. Bachelor of Arts includes art, elementary education, English, geography and environmental studies, and social sciences. And a close second is Bachelor of Business Administration. The top BBA degree is emphasis is accounting. We also offer entrepreneurship, business, human resource management, and marketing. We also have our Bachelor of Science degrees, so there'll be about 20 of those. And the top Bachelor of Science degree is what draws people from all over the country to UAS, and that is in marine biology.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Jeff, we've got a lot of Masters of Arts in Education and Public Administration getting degrees this weekend. And just kind of an FYI, and just sort of a educational thing, I guess, if anything. You know, University of Alaska Fairbanks grants PhDs in fisheries. So if you are getting your doctorate in fisheries, you're getting a UAF degree, but the facilities and the students are here in Juneau, of course, because we're right on the water. So we will have quite a few PhDs getting degrees in the ceremonies on Sunday.
And what time is the ceremony on Saturday?
2 o'clock on Sunday the 6th.
Sunday the 6th, but that's there for everybody.
Yes.
And don't access the university by the way you might be used to doing it for many, many years, because that won't be open anymore.
Exactly. Auk Lake Way, what was the main entrance to UAS, or the first entrance anyway, is no longer open. Now you just want access from what was the back. Now it's the main entrance, which is from the back loop road.
All right, Katie Boston from the University of Alaska Southeast. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 4th of May, 2012. Peter Minuit landed on the island of Manhattan on this date in 1626. The Dutch had a trading post on Governor's Island for a couple of years, and in 1625 they started building Fort Amsterdam on Manhattan. So Minuit arrived to find a small village already in place, more land being cleared. There were great stands of hickory, oak, and chestnut trees among the grasslands, the salt marshes of Manhattan. Times Square was a red maple swamp. A creek ran through Midtown. On the west side of the island, there was a cemetery, a small farm, an orchard, and two wealthy estates. Most of the houses were built along the East River. The main street was an old Indian path running from the southern tip of the island north to what is now City Hall Park. First, it was called Herestraat, Gentleman Street, but eventually it came to be known as Bredeweg, which became the name we know it by today, Broadway. The first Freedom Ride set off on this date, 1961. 13 activists recruited by the Congress of Racial Equality to ride buses throughout the South to test the laws on segregation. An interracial group, most of them college students, set off from Washington, D.C. on their way to New Orleans, the white riders sitting in the back of the bus and the black in the front. They encountered little resistance in the Upper South, but the Deep South was another matter. In Alabama, they were met with baseball bats and guns, beatings, firebombs. They were put into prison, and they never made it to New Orleans. It's the birthday of David Gutterson, born in Seattle, 1956, taught high school for many years, wrote about education and homeschooling, published a short story collection, but he's best known for his first novel, Snow Falling on Cedars. It was a big bestseller in 1994. And it's the birthday of the man who invented the piano, as we know it, Bartolomeo Cristofori, born in Padua, Italy, 1655. He was hired by the Florentine court to take care of the harpsichords, on which, as you know, the strings are plucked, and Cristofori put hammers and dampers and a range of octaves onto the harpsichord model so that the hammers hit the strings so you could play loudly or softly depending on how hard you played the keys. It was called a pianoforte, meaning soft, loud, and then just a piano. One of Cristofori's original pianos is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. Here's a poem for today by Reed Whittemore, entitled The Lovers. Together they stand in the checkout line with their carton of raspberries. They are in love. They love raspberries. He is tall and blonde. She is tall and blonde. They nuzzle each other noisily, exhibitionists in the market, surrounded by lesser flesh, envious, purchasing slag. Soon they will exit gods into the parking lot and drive away in their car with the flowers on it. But the raspberry season is over, and they have chosen the frozen. The line is long, and the carton is starting to drip. The Lovers, by Reid Whittemore, from the past, the future, the present, published by the University of Arkansas Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:21, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are Father George Salides and Michael Lushkin, Senior Warden of the Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. We're doing a workshop tomorrow, it's called Planning for Tomorrow. It's at noon to 4, and it's free. George and Michael, thank you very much for coming on the station today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So this is focusing on end-of-life choices. Who is it for?
Well, it's for everyone. Not only the elderly, but everyone that wants to get a head start on making plans that will ease their loved ones' concerns about choices that their loved one might want to make, but also get ahead of the game as to what you might want to have happen at the hospital should you be incapacitated. We'll talk about durable power of attorney for health care and other things. What are the living choices here in Juneau as you get in your senior years? We're going to cover the whole gamut.
What's on the agenda?
Well, some very knowledgeable people. Bob Urata, talking to us about what happens at the hospital. Rosemary Greening, what happens and how you get hospice and health care. We'll have Chris Walker of Faulkner Banfield talking to us about a variety of things, but not the least of which is estate planning and the benefits, tax benefits, life income benefits, how you can actually improve things if you plan right, and both help your own assets grow and have something to leave to others. So,
along with probates and how to avoid probate, we've got Jamie Fields from New York Life Insurance talking about life insurance and long-term care insurance, which ends up being a very expensive part of one's estate after they maybe pass away or as they get close to passing away. And then the last part of it is our charitable giving session, which is going to talk about lifetime giving that one may want to leave as a legacy gift to the community or to their family, and they can use the Juneau Community Foundation as one vehicle in terms of making that happen. So we have Amy Skilbred, that's going to be participating in the last session.
Before we went on the air, we were looking at a book that Ginny Palmerhill put together. Do you want to talk a little bit about that book and its value as a resource?
Well, it's a terrific resource. It's called When You're Not Here, A Guide for Helping Those You Love.
And it's put together by the this group here.
Well, she did a great deal of the work herself after she lost her own husband, but it's now a part of the materials made available by the Juneau End of Life Foundation. And it's a terrific resource. It's very comprehensive, and it can also be very overwhelming in as much as it's a huge catalog of printed materials that ask you where all your stuff is. And if you're like me, you don't know where it is right now. But the nice thing about tomorrow is there'll be people you know and people who can answer questions who can get us from a stuck spot to having moved along a little bit by the end of the afternoon.
And we have several free copies of this publication to hand out to anybody that attends tomorrow.
It's tremendously helpful, and I'm going to take one home with me. I have made a will, but there's a lot of other things I haven't done that, oh, wow, I should do that too.
It's interesting that over 60% of Americans don't have wills. Everyone keeps on thinking, I'll do that tomorrow. Everyone knows it's a good thing to do. The problem is we get so stressed with our day-to-day activities, paying bills, taking care of the kids, that we don't take the time to address how we may want to be cared for or how we want to care for those loved ones after we're gone.
Things like computer passwords and things like that.
Sure.
Exactly.
Where do you keep documents? Is it in the back of a book someplace? Is it underneath the pillow that the cat's sitting on? Or is there another spot that's easy to find?
Seems like a lot of this stuff is not rocket science, but it's difficult emotionally.
Very much so.
Most especially. And perhaps that's why a church thinks about sponsoring something like this. I know the other organizations do, but our Episcopal tradition actually mandates that an Episcopal priest take the responsibility to remind their congregation of this responsibility to think about the ones they love and to think about their family. It used to be in the part of the prayer book that dealt with sick people, but they moved it to the part that prays for a family, because that's really what you're thinking about is how your family will be supported and, through this time of grieving, and also how they might be supported even financially if we just pay attention to this kind of work. So we're delighted to be this, along with Faulkner Banfield, the sponsors of this, you're right, emotionally challenging bit of work. A friend of mine once said, though, it's like giving blood. Nobody wants to do that. It's what a horrible idea. But everybody that does it is so proud of themselves afterwards.
And I would add that, you know, by maybe going through educational seminars like what we're going to be offering tomorrow, these sort of things avoid conflict for you or the family members within your in part of your greater life, because most importantly, I think we all want to be able to provide comfort to the people that we love the most after we're gone.
What do you think some of the common things that people overlook are?
Well, one is sort of the favorite stuff, you know, that have you asked people, is this really an important artifact in our life over the years, or is it just junk, you know? I mean, I love it, but does anybody else? And sometimes it turns out that nobody wants it, and you've been killing yourself taking care of it. The other half, of course, is that two or three people want the same thing, and they fight over it, and you can settle that in advance. The other thing is, you know, being clear about if you have any charitable gifts you want to make with your estate going forward, again, what matters most to you needs to be clearly stated. And this is a chance for you to make a gift in advance of giving it that you can feel good about having done, and you can let others know about it, and they can put that to rest. There's no argument. This percentage of this estate is going to this charitable charity. We're just going to have to live with that. And many people are actually prouder of their parents for having made the choice than they were before.
But those are the things I think that we always start thinking about as division of property and so forth, that we may want to also focus, though, on those near end of life type decisions. What happens when one goes to the hospital? Those are things that Bob Jurata will be able to speak to. What's going to happen, or services Juno Hospice can provide for you? Do you have end-of-life issues in terms of where you want to stay? Would it be at the Pioneer Home or maybe in your own actual residence? These are some of the many decisions that one, if they have the time, and that's, I think, what we're trying to provide to the wider Juno community, is these chances to make decisions on how you want to help your family make those decisions so that you're not in a point where you're incapacitated and you can no longer participate.
Things like organ donation as well.
Of course. In advanced healthcare directive is becoming a very popular item, or a do not resuscitate form that you may be asked to fill out at Bartlett Hospital, and things of that sort. And so many more things than that I may not be able to answer, but we have the experts coming to Holy Trinity tomorrow at 12 to talk about those things. And so we invite everybody to come, and we hope that they can take advantage of this. And if not this one, then another one.
And it's a free lecture, and participation is open to the public?
Of course.
Not only free, but there's food, a drink, and you'll leave with some swag and materials for yourself for having come. Michael makes the best point, I think, to your answer to your question, Jeff, is that the people who we've got coming are the experts that know the questions that we, you and I, forget to ask. And that's what we're most delighted about. It's just making the space-time available for them and the community of Juneau to get together.
Do people need to pre-register?
No registration required.
No registration. It's free. It's going to be in McPheeters Hall up on 4th and Gold Street downtown in Juneau. It'll be from 12 to 4, but you don't have to stay for the full 4 hours. We're starting off with a session primarily on the hospital part of it from 12 to 1, and then from 1 we start the basics of the estate planning, and at 2:30 we end with a charitable giving session. So people can kind of come and go as they have time available. We recognize that there's going to probably be lots of things going on a Saturday.
All right, Michael Luxton and Father George Slidas, thank you for coming down. But before we go, what's a senior warden in the hierarchy of things of the Episcopal Church?
Well, we've got a boss called a bishop, then you've got a priest, myself, Father George, and then the church council president, who usually has the priest back, but sometimes he has to take me out back.
And then the person is a warden?
And he's called the senior warden. It's an English retention from when we were the Church of England business.
If people miss this information, is there any of this available online as well?
Yes, it is. It's posted on the JAC website. It's also on the inside second page of the Juneau Empire. There was an ad in this morning's paper, if people still have the paper. And I guess you could email the church at holytrinity@gci.com, and we'd be happy to email any more information out or to call us. My phone number is 463-5261.
My phone number is 321-0507.
And we all know what it sounds like. All right, George Slidas and also Michael Luxton, thank you for coming down to the station talking about planning for tomorrow. Goes on from noon until 4 and is absolutely free. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, you've been very thorough, but we want to really thank you for all you've done for Juneau, Jeff, and for having us over here this afternoon.
Thank you for all you've done for Juneau.
Greetings, Juneau. My name is Jim Zeller, and I'm a part of the One People Canoe Society. We're going to be once again participating in the Juneau Maritime Festival on Saturday, May 12th. Be there to welcome us at 11 a.m. when we land for our traditional welcoming ceremony. Throughout the rest of the afternoon, you can participate in canoe activities down on the dock. Sign up at our booth. There will also be kids' activities, tours of working vessels, fresh fish samples, live entertainment, and much more. Visit JuneauMaritimeFestival.org.
as before.
KTUO News in Juneau, it's 3:37. You're part of the featured acts of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. If you need more information or need to buy tickets, you can go to their website at www.jazzandclassics.org. Here's some more music from Lily Smith.
like your daddy, go find yourself 5 or 6 men. And if that's not enough, go find yourself 8, 9, or 10. I got a man in Atlanta, 2 in Alabama, 3 in Cincinnati, 4 in Chattanooga, 5 in Mississippi, 6 in Memphis, Tennessee. If you don't fuck my peaches, honey, let my orchard be.
Louis Smith and the Red Hot Skillet Lickers, part of the Jazz and Classics Festival, starting tonight with Taj Mahal's performance, and Sunday night with Saturday, I think, the Barney McClure does workshops, where the cabaret performances is on Wednesday, I think, and then 7:30 on Sunday, the Hot Club of Cowtown.
The KTOO KRNN live radio auction is coming up May 12th. Tune into either station or come on by the studio to bid on more than 200 items, including a trip to Mexico, local kayak trips, handmade jewelry, glacier flight tours, fresh-baked goodies, local theater tickets, and so much more. We're putting the finishing touches on the catalog now, but it will be posted on our websites by Monday. Pre-bids are welcome and encouraged. Again, that's the KTOO KRNN Live Radio Auction coming up on May 12th. Thank you.
music of Brandon McClurry. He'll be leading a cabaret workshop starting on Saturday as part of Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, and I think there's also a performance of the Cabaret Singers. It's next Wednesday, again, as part of the jazzandclassics.org festival. In the studio with us now are students from Thunder Mountain High School Theater Department. They've got a presentation called Right On, Saturday at 7:30 in the evening, a one-act play written by students performed by their peers. Now they may introduce themselves now, if you could, please.
I'm Ryan Hicks.
I'm Miranda Gencio.
I'm Tulsa Cooper.
I'm Ting Zhao Ming.
And I'm Kristen Garreau, and I'm the play production supervisor and the theater teacher out at Thunder Mountain. And we have been working for a few weeks now with students in the English department and Perseverance Theater on a playwriting unit. And we took some of those plays, and now we're producing them for the stage, and we'll be on tomorrow night.
Do we have authors and playwrights in the studio with us?
In the studio today, we just have actors and stage crew folks.
How many one-act plays are there?
We have four plays that we're doing. And Ryan's going to tell us a little bit about Kwaku's Cafe, which is the first one on the program.
So Kwaku's Cafe is about a guy named Kwaku, who I play, and his best friend Alana, who is 30 years old, and she is trying to find a man. And there's a random man, and his name is Himesh. And they go through this speed dating adventure story, and at the very end, they find each other, and they're like, hey, hi, I'm Himesh, and I'm Alana, ha, 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 want my number? And it's a really good, really funny play. I really like it.
And that was written by one of our students, Hannah Perez.
Who also plays Alana.
Who is also performing in it, yeah. And Hannah's a new student to us from California this year, just this semester, so it was exciting to get her right in the process.
What kind of marching instructions were they given to when they were asked to write the plays?
So as the classroom activity, they were given pretty wide range. We talked a lot about personal experiences, and kids shared a lot of personal experiences that we kind of mapped on the board, highs and lows from their life, and then they were really encouraged to write about what they knew or what they knew about their friends' lives, and to not dramatize their own lives necessarily, but just to sort of take experiences of the world around them and put them on paper and have a beginning, middle, and end, have some different scenes, different settings, have a monologue. And we talked about all those elements, and then they were kind of let loose for a little while. And then we had two visiting playwrights who worked with them, Shona Strausser from Perseverance, and Marissa Marquez, who was here from New York, who was working on the Flipsoids play with Generator Theater Company. And the two of them helped kind of hone in those four plays and work on some editing with them and come to the products that we have now.
Do we have another play just to be described here now?
Tesla, do you want to tell us about another play? Tesla is here. She's working on lighting design and the technical aspects of the show. Do you want to talk about Explosions has a little more complicated tech aspect? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
For Explosions, what I have to do is split the stage up into three different sections: full stage, stage left, and stage right. And from scene to scene, we have to switch from left to right, from left to right, and still manage to keep the transition fluid and, yeah.
And that was a pretty busy play. They're short plays. They're one-act plays, so they're about 10 to 12 minutes each. And that one's full of a lot of action and some good sound effects, too. It's about the president being kidnapped and being rescued by Vladimir Petushkin, a Russian standby go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like the secret agent.
Secret agent guy.
Was there a chance for the authors to collaborate with the people who were actually producing the play?
There was some back and forth conversation. A lot of the playwrights were actually involved in other extracurricular activities like track and softball and baseball and soccer, and so it was hard for them to come to our rehearsals at the same time that we were rehearsing. But there was some conversation and some dialogue back and forth with the messages from the director and cast to the playwrights. So.
And what did you learn in the procedure?
What did you guys learn? Nothing. You learned things. What did you learn, Ryan?
Well, I learned that you have to accept whatever part you get. In Kwaku's Cafe, I am a hipster gangster cook. I'm not very gangster, so I had to kind of portray this. And my friend Miranda, who is also here, is playing a transgender. And
I am not a man. I'm a woman, but I have to play a man.
And the scene, I'm in the scene with her and Alana, and it's a quite funny scene. And I also have to play a redneck, I think that's the term. And then I have a son who is a daughter. So, I don't know. I wanted a son, but my wife turned out to have a daughter. And it's just lots of fun, and I like the plays.
Is there a good mix of serious and humorous plays?
There is. There are a couple of... There's one play that's really funny, like, the whole time through. It's just kind of nonstop laughter. And then there's another more serious play that's about a football player, college football player, whose girlfriend is killed in a drunk driving accident, and just sort of how he deals with that and how his friends help him move on and kind of rally when he's really feeling the effects of the loss in his life. And Ting Zhao, who's here, she plays one of the officers who has to come and tell this really sad news to the family. And so there's that kind of sad and tragic story. And then there's the romantic comedy, Kwaku's Cafe, and the sort of other silly but interesting to think about play, Right to Bear Arms, about the possible effects of the if the Second Amendment were negated and people's guns were taken away from them. So it's an interesting mix of a lot of different things.
How long do the playwrights have to work on the plays themselves?
They had about a total of probably about a month from very beginning to end, but they worked for concentrated probably 2 weeks of really solid writing time. So.
And how long was the rehearsal period?
It's a short rehearsal period. We've been rehearsing for 2 weeks. So, and most of the students in the performances are double cast, so they're in 2 of the 4 shows, and a pretty quick rehearsal period. And it's a black box theater production, so we're on the stage, the audience is on the stage, it's limited seating, there's only 100 seats available for folks, and everything is pretty minimal and pretty intimate, and it's a good experience, a little bit different experience for the actors and for our crew and for our Thunder Mountain audiences too, so it's a nice variety.
It's coming up this Saturday at 7:30, right on, produced by the Thunder Mountain High School Theater from the Theater Department. One-act plays written by students performed by their peers. Anything anybody would like to add before we go away here for the night?
The Ryan, plays are really fun, and it's a great show. Everyone should come watch because there's only 100 seats, and if you don't get that spot, you miss out on an opportunity to watch 4 really great shows and me being a gangster, so...
And me, Tesla, breakdancing on stage. Not breakdancing per se, but dancing across the stage.
With
and
me.
Having so much fun doing it.
High five.
Yeah.
So where's this going to be performed in the auditorium itself?
This will be in the auditorium at Thunder Mountain High School, 7:30 on Saturday night.
Is there an admission charge?
It's $10 for adults and $8 for students of any age.
All right, well, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Knock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. Also online at www.ktwo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3, coming up Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with pianist Barney McClure, who we're listening to right now, about Wednesday's Cabaret concert as part of this year's Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. Becky Janes and Brock Tabor from Above and Beyond Alaska will highlight their introduction to kayaking class. We'll learn about Wednesday's season finale of Mudrooms with guests Amanda Compton and P.B. Rohrbacher. Jim Panora and Kirk Nugent will be here to talk about solid waste recycling in Juneau. The Writer's Almanac and Music and more with Bird Note tomorrow, Monday at 3 on KTOO News. Weather forecast for tonight, rain showers, snow level to 1,300 feet, low temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, rain showers with high temperatures around 47 degrees. Sunday looks like more rain with high temperatures around 50 degrees. Sunday night, more rain, and Wednesday, Monday through Tuesday night, looks like rain is in the forecast. I'm here next with All Things Considered. Have a great weekend, stay dry if you can, and enjoy the Juneau Jazz and Classics concerts if you can.